In today's Eco Report feature, we hear part two of correspondent Bob Kissel's report from Ecuador. Kissel visited the country on a two-week bird-watching tour, and he interviewed his guide, Willie Perez.
Guide Willie Perez, we talked about the role in ecotourism for many of the native tribes in Ecuador.
Your country has a number of indigenous tribes. Are there some of the tribes who are participating in ecotourism, given that they live in very remote areas with birds that people generally may never see?
We have several ethnic groups. Some of them, especially these Guarani clans, you know, that they decided not to be in contact with the Western world, they are still untouched, I would say. But there are a lot of communities, you know, a lot of indigenous people who decided to join some ecotourism projects. And one of them is the Napo Wildlife Center, it's called, which is owned right now 100% by a local community called Anyango. And these guys, you know, they have this stunning lodge, and they make good income, and it's run by the community. There is another small lodge called Shiripuno, which is in the Asuni National Park in the Waurani territory. They are also involved in tourism, run by a gentleman called Harold Baca, but the community is also involved. You know, they work there. There is another lodge called Sani, which is with the Quechua people. The lodge is owned and run by a community. So there are a lot of communities who are involved in ecotourism now. Definitely they are, but there are few people who actually don't want to be involved, mm-hmm. You know, and they have been a kind of strong saying, can you leave us just how we are? So yeah, they are getting involved, you know, and obviously it's a process, it's a change, and I think eventually they will change, like what happened in many places, but so far I think some of them, they don't want to do it yet.
One of the days you mentioned the Chocobayo territory that stretches from Central America into Ecuador.
The Chocobayo region.
Chocobayo. And can you talk about how that was and how it is now?
The Chocobayo region is a very unique hotspot for biodiversity. Basically, it starts, you know, from the Darien, I mean, South Panama, and all the western side of Colombia, and basically ends on the equator, on the western side of Ecuador. This place is very unique for, first of all, for number of species, but also for endemism. The reason why it is so high for these endemic species, because there is a lot of rain and a lot of moisture, and humidity and heat and all of that. So until now, obviously, it's considered one of the 10 hot spots for biodiversity in the world. But in Ecuador, unfortunately, as far as I know, it's something like 3% of the forest is left, the Choco forest. So during this visit, we have been actually going to Silanche, where we went, is one of the remnants of the Choco bioregion. But actually, that's an island of forests. There are some small reserves, small places that are trying to protect, but most of the forest, the Choco forest in Ecuador, is gone. Most of the problem has been logging, and also oil palm growth is everywhere.
What's the future for Ecuador's biotourism and ecotourism working hand in hand to preserve and enhance what you have, which is spectacular?
Everything is run by politics, and I don't want to start this, you know, in politics, but it will be great if the government will get more involved, you know, doing promotion and all of that. But what I see is that we have a big potential still. We are recognized as a country, as a mega diverse. The biodiversity of species in general, like plants, mammals, birds, insects, is so big. And every time we are creating more facilities. So there are better places to stay. There are more facilities to organize transport. Roads are in better conditions, and that's something good that the government has done. So people can move faster to different locations. There are more flights that has different connections to different places. What I see is that also people get more involved in tourism. There are more guides. I would say there are better guides now than it used to be. Also because media, all the technology and things like that is helping to develop this kind of, I would say, free promotion. If we keep the country developing in that kind of way, with being careful with what we do, not trying to damage or spoil it, I think we still have a big potential to make tourism or ecotourism one of the main incomes, maybe the first or the second for the country. As I said, I guide in different countries, and Ecuador maybe is one of the easiest one to guide because there are facilities for birding. Lodges like the one that we are staying, we can get breakfast at any time, which is
early.
You don't get it. When I go to Argentina, no one wants to give breakfast, you know, at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, because they are not accustomed to this kind of tourism. But in Ecuador, there is a market, there are a lot of birding companies bringing people, and also young students from universities, they come and stay in places like this. So it's opening more, and now with all these, as I said, free advertising, you like pictures being sent in a second to friends and family all over the world, it seems that's growing.
What are some of your favorite places in Ecuador?
There are so many places, you know, I love to go. I will say for birding, the place that I love is the western side of Pichincha province, which is where we are now. And one of the reasons is because I grew up there, but also is especially here, you know, the altitude where we are, which is around 1,300 meters. The temperature is so nice. It's kind of, it's not so hot, it's not too cold. Birds are everywhere, frogs calling. Nature is wonderful. There are so many choices for accommodation. You can go from $10 to $150, $200 a night. Mm-hmm. So the choices are better. But also as a bioregion, as a diverse place, is my favorite. And another one will be the Amazon Basin. And the reason why is because I work in this lodge in Capawi for 4 years. And I fell in love with the culture because we used to work together with an ethnic group called the Achuars, which is a very unique ethnic group. But also the biodiversity was so big, with monkeys and tapirs and pink dolphins. I love to go back. I would say between the cloud forest in this area, you know, like Mindo area and Makipukuna, and the rainforest on the east are my favorite places.
Okay.
For WFHB, this has been Bob Kissel reporting from high in the Andes Mountains of Ecuador.
Seeking volunteer journalists to contribute short weekly headlines about ecological issues from indigenous resistance to infrastructure projects to climate change and biological diversity. Commitment is light and you can set your own schedule. For more information, email us at earth@wfhb.org or call 812-323-1200. It's time now for In Nature, a segment focusing on the flora and fauna of South Central Indiana.
This is In Nature.
Ringneck snakes, Diadophis punctatus, are small snakes from 10 to 12 inches long, found in the moist woods of this region. They are secretive, nocturnal species that live on lizards, amphibian slugs, and other small creatures. Their top is light brown to black, with a bright yellow band around their neck. Their underbelly is also bright yellow. Ringneck snakes are not aggressive. Though they use venom on their prey, they are not known to bite large predators. Their reaction to disturbance is to curl their tail tightly, exposing the yellow coloration on their belly. These snakes capture their prey by striking and then constricting. Once the snake has secured its prey, it uses its back teeth to inject the animal with a venom produced by a gland behind the snake's eyes. Ringneck snakes mate in spring. Males are attracted to pheromones secreted by the female. A male snake rubs his closed mouth along the female's body, then bites her ring and maneuvers himself so that he can insert sperm into her vent. The female then lays 3 to 10 eggs in a moist, aerated soil under rotted logs or stones. Eggs are laid in early summer and hatch in August or September. Large numbers of these snakes hibernate together in a deep hole or under rotted wood. During hot weather, they make holes or burrow under logs.
You've been listening to In Nature.
And now for our weekly events calendar. There will be a full moon hike at Spring Mill State Park on Saturday, July 8th from 9 to 10:30 p.m. Hike by the light of the full moon around Spring Mill Lake. Meet at the Lakeview Activity Center for this moderate 1-mile hike.
The Homegrown Indiana Farm Tour will take place on Sunday, July 9th from 4 to 8:30 p.m. Tour Blue Hour Farm, a 3.3-acre organic farm on the southwest side of Bloomington, followed by a tour of Marble Hill Farm, which has over 200 animals, including Angus cattle, Shetland sheep, poultry, horses, donkeys, and waterfowl. The evening culminates with a dinner prepared by local chefs, including vegetarian and vegan options. This is a farm-to-fork experience you will not want to miss. The bus departs from City Hall at 4:15 p.m. For more information and to register for this ticketed event, visit bloomington.in.gov/farmersmarket.
Enjoy an Urban Boots hike with instructor Becky Janaya down the Beeline Trail to explore nature in the heart of downtown Bloomington on Saturday, July 9th from 9 to 10 a.m. While you're on the walk, you will identify trees, spot evidence of animals, and listen for birds. Meet on the steps of City Hall for this walk before you begin your farmers market shopping. Register by July 9th at bloomington.in.gov/parks.
Take an edible plants hike at the Paintown State Recreation Area at Monroe Lake on Friday, July 14th from 8 to 8:45 p.m. Do you want to learn how to integrate some common wild edible plants into your diet? Join this hike to identify and sample several wild plants. Meet at the campground playground.
Amy Greeley, the artist in residence at Brown County State Park, will present Forest Understory on Saturday, July 15th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., which will include a workshop and a hike. You will explore the often overlooked understory of the forest floor. Lichen, fungus, ferns, and wildflowers will be observed on the trails and will serve as inspiration for a series of wearable art pieces to be created and shared with the public by hands-on demonstrations. Meet at the Brown County State Park Nature Center to participate.
That wraps up our show for this week. Eco Report is brought to you in part by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
This week's news stories were written by Ashley Curtis, Cole Stinson, Linda Green, and Norm Holy. The feature was produced by Bob Kissel. Rebecca Mueller edited the script, and myself, Juliana Daly, compiled our events calendar. Our engineer is Sarah Vaughn. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Juliana Daly.
And I'm David Lyman. Join us on Thursdays at 11:30 a.m. before Democracy Now! And on Fridays at 5 p.m. before Kiteline for our weekly radio rundown of ecological news and resistance. Until then, Eco Report encourages you to take direct action to defend the Earth.
You've been listening to the Eco Report,
a volunteer-powered production of Community Radio WFHB
in Bloomington, Indiana.
Available for download and podcast at news.wfhb.org.
Eco Report is your independent, ecologically inspired news source
for South Central Indiana.
Bringing you news that the Earth wants you to hear.
Send your comments, suggestions, and story ideas
directly to the Eco Report staff.
The email address is
earth@wfhb.org.
That's earth@wfhb.org.